I'm Ainsley Earhart, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, February 15th, 2019. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. It might be cold to break up with someone on Valentine's Day, but that's what Amazon just did to New York.
You had a large portion of New Yorkers that supported the deal because it brought an influx of money into the area. And then you had local politicians that were relatively against it.
I'm Simon Owen in London, where Brexit is prompting some British Jews whose families fled the Nazis to consider taking German citizenship, whatever their ancestors might think.
They would be disgusted. They would be horrified. And I don't think they'd understand. And I understand why they wouldn't understand.
And I'm Chris Wallace. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
You know that saying, all news is local? I think now it's all news is political.
Amazon says, okay, we're out. We do not have to be a part of this. New York City was chosen as one of those two sites for the HQ2.
In its statement, Amazon blames local and state leaders, saying while 70% of New Yorkers supported their plans to have a second headquarter location on Long Island City, a small group of politicians will not work with them to get the project done. So they say they're out and no longer even looking for a replacement city. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who'd been negotiating with Amazon, wouldn't name names, but said those politicians have done tremendous damage, lamenting what he called a lost opportunity to diversify their economy away from real estate and Wall Street. She didn't need to hear her name from the governor because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has proudly associated herself with the fight to get Amazon out, blasting the state after the company announced they'd go to Virginia and New York. She said the last thing they need is to spend money incentivizing a company like Amazon to come. Thursday, she tweeted, "Anything is possible. Today was the day a group of dedicated, everyday New Yorkers and their neighbors defeated Amazon's corporate greed, its worker exploitation, and the power of the richest man in the world."
You had New Yorkers, and I'm talking all of New York, not just New York City, and that's often what people think of. You had a large portion of New Yorkers that supported the deal because it brought an influx of money into the area.
Fox business correspondent Christina Partsinevelis.
And then you had local politicians that were relatively against it. Some that voiced their opinion because they were concerned about a large tech corporation getting so many tax incentives, so many tax breaks. And they were also concerned about the inflated housing prices that would happen once Amazon moved into the area.
That's just how business works to a certain extent, right? I mean, we've been hearing as long as I've been a reporter, and you look back in time over history, it's just, oh, you want this big dog to come to your town? You try and entice them. Like, that's part of the game.
Exactly. That is spot on. And that was the issue. Because Amazon, they got roughly about, about $3 billion in tax incentives and tax breaks. And that was a big problem. Like, why do we keep giving subsidies to large corporations? But that's the way it works in business. You want to entice people to come to your city. A lot of cities put money on the table to offer Amazon to come forward. Virginia was one of them. So there was going to be, Amazon is still going ahead with Virginia. But the issue with New York is those tax incentives were so high because taxes are higher here. It's more expensive here. So you needed to give a company a bigger break had they gone to a much smaller city in middle America.
Governor Cuomo did not mention Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez by name, but we know the freshman congresswoman in New York made a big stink about these incentives between the time she won her primary and the time she became a congresswoman. And I'm wondering, can you sort of talk to us a little bit about Governor Cuomo's reaction. Without mentioning her, he did say politicians who said things like the things she said just did tremendous damage and should be held accountable.
He alluded to calling them a small group of politicians who put their own narrow political interest above their community. So you're right. There was an indirect jab at the likes of certain people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You can't reprimand a politician for voicing their opinion and, you know, getting people to rally and protest. I think because there were so many headlines, though, because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because there was another Democratic politician, local one, too, that was very vocal about Amazon coming through, there was constant talk about Amazon. And Amazon, I think at this point, didn't want to be associated with all that drama. Maybe there's more behind just the headlines. We've reached out to Amazon trying to get statements because they haven't actually purchased any land there. They did this big deal, like we're searching around for our second headquarters, get cities to bid. Every single media outlet around the globe covered this story. So it was really good for Amazon. But in the end, why didn't Amazon start to move forward with the process? And why wait? And that's what I'm confused about. Why wait until this exact moment now to say, hey, we're going to pull out?
That's a great question. We don't have an answer, though, do we?
Unfortunately not.
Side note, one beneficiary here has been Nashville of Amazon's, I guess, desire to grow and have another hub, if you will. It's not a headquarters, but it's a hub. The mayor of Nashville said, don't worry, pulling out of New York has no bearing on us. I'm wondering if instead of, you know, comforting people as to not worry, could Nashville actually benefit from Amazon even more here? If New York's out and Amazon's saying, well, look, we're not even going to look for a second headquarters, is Nashville sort of de facto headquarter number two?
Nashville could reap some of the benefits, but I don't think I would just put the onus on Nashville. I think now there's an opportunity across the entire country for more job opportunities to pop up. DC, I think I saw a headline very recently that DC too is starting to see more job openings in the area. So maybe Amazon will reallocate. And they actually said that they would at their tech hubs, but you might start to see jobs pop up across the country, because they originally were going to open the position for 25,000 jobs in Long Island City. So now they're going to get those jobs elsewhere. The company is still growing. They're doing phenomenally well. They're one of the largest companies in terms of market cap on the public markets. You have Jeff Bezos, the founder, who's the richest man in the world. They are going to continue to grow. They're going to need employees. This could be a good opportunity for Nashville, but I also think it could be a good opportunity for other cities.
Amazon said most New Yorkers wanted them to come. A Quinnipiac University poll found 57% of New York City residents wanted them to come, compared to just 26% who opposed the deal. There were protests.
25,000 new problems, not 25,000 jobs.
But one of the first local leaders to tell Amazon to take a hike was Assemblyman Ron Kim.
I'm happy that the deal is crushed and not coming in, but we still have a lot of work to do in terms of making sure that we prevent these type of situations where we're being pitted against other states, other cities, to fight to give away these massive corporate welfare. I mean, that is the core reason why I stood against Amazon, and I will continue to do so in the future.
I think a lot of us are used to that being sort of the way business is done. You know, you want a behemoth, you want like a monster like Amazon to come in. A lot of people look at that as a good thing, something that can create jobs and revenue. Why don't you guys see it that way? Why don't you see it that way?
Well, I think for too many years now, politicians have pitched words like jobs and revenue and growth to justify the giveaway of literally up to $10 billion a year in places like New York. But after many years, third-party economists and analysts have analyzed numbers, and there's absolutely no statistical correlation of the money that we've been doling out to these companies and the jobs and the growth that they promised to deliver, which is the reason why in places like Europe and the EU, they completely banned the practice of corporate incentives. They realized that not only is it's ineffective, but it also hurts the local economies and small businesses. So we want to go back at a place where we can actually work with other states to hold these companies accountable. And I have legislation around that called an interstate compact with participating states to stop competing in these type of race to the bottom.
It almost sounds like you're standing up to Amazon, or at least you guys fancy yourselves as standing up to Amazon, and in so doing, in a proxy way, almost standing up to corporations in general and saying, no, we have demands. You don't get to make the demands.
Right. And Amazon is the ultimate example, because they've just been a bad corporate partner from beginning to end. And I've known that about Amazon, but now for the first time, the world is exposed to the kind of bad behavior that they're engaged in.
Bad behavior?
I mean, beginning to end, to create this competition for 14 months, having mayors and politicians create YouTube clips saying we're prying for Amazon, making elected officials spend money to put these marketing videos out there to try to get their attention and also give up data and valuable information to the corporation, knowing that they already knew that in the first place they wanted to be in a place like New York City. These corporations, these companies, they know where the talent is. All they've done so far was to try to extract as much money out of our state as possible when they already made up their mind that they wanted to be in the first place. And when they didn't get what they wanted, instead of coming to the table and trying to work with the local leaders and listen to the complaints and issues that we're dealing with, from failing subways to schools being overcrowded, a number of issues that needs to be resolved, they walked away from the moment that they had conflict. I mean, this is New York City. People don't come here to tell us what to do. We tell them. We set the terms.
Now, I'd be remiss if I was speaking to a local New York politician who was against this plan from jump without asking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's influence here. What kind of influence did this young woman have here, and what role did she play here?
I think the influence that she has is intangible, that she set this tone, pointing out the fact that the richest man on earth and one of two $2 trillion companies is about to get $3 billion of our taxpayers' money in the next 10 years, how backwards that was, and we shouldn't be subsidizing a dime for a corporation. Like, she called it out, and with their influence in social media and the political clout that she's gained in a very short period of time, has set the tone for many local elected officials, local council members, to follow.
All right. Ron Kim, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Chris Wallace with your Fox News commentary coming up.
6 weeks from today, Britain is due to leave the European Union. But away from complex negotiations about trade and customs regulations and immigration and security, Brexit has also thrown up a very personal question for some Jewish people here, whether to apply for German citizenship, specifically reclaim citizenship that was stripped by the Nazis. Holding a passport from an EU country comes with certain benefits that Brits stand to lose after Brexit, including the right to live and work in any of the EU's member states. And Britain allows dual nationality, so there are no practical obstacles in that sense. But for some Jews, there's an added emotional aspect about turning to a country where, in many cases, their relatives were murdered by the state.
My parents came over to this country as Jewish refugees in the 1930s. They were amongst the last to leave because they worked for a Jewish organisation that was trying to get Jews out of the country before Hitler closed the borders. And they married over here, and I was born in 1950.
Carol Hedges is an author born and raised in Britain. Her parents fled Nazi Germany. Her paternal grandparents were killed at the Auschwitz death camp. Growing up, she says she didn't know much about her parents' experience.
They spoke very, very little about what had happened in Germany and to the family. I knew my grandparents on my father's side had been killed in a concentration camp. My mother's side got out and they were in this country. And really, that was all I knew. And it really wasn't until the Brexit vote that I suddenly was challenged as to my identity and the identity of my family.
And so, June 2016, Britain votes to leave the European Union. What happened next for you?
So, as soon as the result came through, I just felt as if something had died. There was a terrific sense of bereavement. Obviously, having been brought up by European parents, I never felt particularly British despite my upbringing. And I just despaired. And I didn't know what to do. And then about 6 or 7 months in, I happened to read an article in The Guardian, which is a British newspaper for American listeners. And it was written by a journalist who had got restored citizenship. I didn't even realise you could do this. The German government had a system whereby if you could prove that your grandparents or your parents on your father's side had been murdered by the Nazis, you could get your citizenship restored. And I just thought to myself, I could do this. And my thinking was, the government wants to take away my EU citizenship here is a way that I can go around that. And then I also thought, I have a daughter and I have grandchildren, and they can claim citizenship on the back of what I've done. And so I started investigating from the point of absolutely nothing, because I had no papers, nothing but the stories I'd been told. I started investigating my family history and what had happened to Alma and Raffaele Flartower.
As Hedges searched for clues about her grandparents, an online registry of Holocaust victims looked like it might offer some answers.
And I typed in the names and I pressed the button, and there they were. I'm getting emotional just talking about it. There were their names. And there was the list of where those names occurred on the transport from Berlin, on the arrival at Auschwitz, and their final end. And it just said murdered. I just looked at it. I could not believe what I was seeing. But there they were. There was my proof. There was my evidence. And there was my way of getting restored citizenship. And I could not believe when I saw those names that I actually sat and I cried. And it was just such a thing, because you were thinking about this couple and you were thinking about them being taken from their homes just for being Jewish, put into a cattle truck just for being Jewish, you know, stripped of their dignity, their humanity, just for being Jewish, and then herded into a gas chamber and killed just for being Jewish. And it really affected me very, very deeply.
And yet, this happened in Germany, and you were doing this as part of the process of applying for that country's citizenship. Did you feel any kind of discomfort with that?
No. People have said to me, oh, well, did you forgive the Germans? But that's not actually mine to do. That forgiveness would have to have been done by my grandparents and my parents, and they are dead now. So Germany is not that Germany. People think, oh, the Germans did this and this and this. The German government of the 1930s did what they did. Angela Merkel has been amazing in opening the doors to refugees. I know she's had a lot of trouble. And the German government has made reparation, both physically and financially, to Jews, but also in giving us restored citizenship. And therefore, on that level, on the level of me and modern Germany, there is no emotional hostility.
The German embassy in London says it used to receive around 20 citizenship applications a year. Since the Brexit vote, it's had more than 3,000. Michael Newman, chief executive of UK Group, the Association of Jewish Refugees, says for many people, the application process proves to be an emotional one.
I think people have, I won't say done it necessarily with a heavy heart, but they have thought deeply about whether this is the right thing to do. A number of people I've heard say, my grandmother would be spinning in her grave at the idea of this. And I think for some of the first generation, it might be difficult as well, because they, of course, had the direct experience and know what was lost and know what happened to them in a country that their son now is interested to become a citizen of. So, yeah, there's definitely high emotion and psychological impact of applying.
Do you think people resent the fact that they're kind of potentially having to go through this if they want an EU passport, or is it almost being cathartic for some people?
Oh, well, I think it's both. I think for some people, going through this explores the depths of their, because they had to produce documents about their family's history, and that itself is probably uncovering things. And for others, it's just a completely logical thing. Don't forget, a lot of the refugees who came here had a strong affinity and affection for Germany. It's the Nazi era which is the problem, and that shouldn't define Germany as a whole. I think it was very much an indigenous British Jewish community approach post-war, was that everything German was bad. But for a lot of the refugees who came from Germany, they feel the opposite.
For Carol Hedges, now the holder of both British and German citizenship, there's little doubt how her late parents would react.
They would be disgusted. They would be horrified. So I'm quite glad they're not around. And I don't think they'd understand. And I understand why they wouldn't understand.
Why don't you think they would, if you talked about it, you don't think they'd come around to your way of thinking? Why do you think that?
I just think their experience of Germany, what happened to them as young adults, as they were slowly deprived of everything and then were made to leave, I don't think they would have been able to relate to what I was doing. And that's fine. You know, it's a bit like the difference between the leavers and the remainers on the Brexit vote. You have to accept that other people are going to have diametrically opposed views to you and just live with it. So at least I don't have to go through that with them, or they with me.
Did that give you pause as you went through this, that you thought, you seem very clear that you don't think they'd have agreed with this? Did that give you pause as you went through it?
No, it didn't, because basically I'm looking to the future and I'm looking to my grandchildren and my daughter, and they are the important people in my life. They're the ones whose lives are going to be impacted by what's going on in this country for years and years and years. And my job, my duty, my love is to do the best for them.
Download and make it Hammer Time with Bill Hemmer.
Welcome, Kellyanne Conway.
Carl Rove, welcome.
Ainsley Earhart.
Thank you, Bill. I like the Hemmer Time.
Hemmer Time. Yes.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Childhood favorite Sesame Street turns 50 this year, and one of the Muppets on the show has been given a new situation to deal with. Homelessness. Lily is a 7-year-old bright pink Muppet whose family is staying with friends on Sesame Street after losing their home.
How you doing, Lily?
Oh, I'm okay. It's just that, well, everyone else is going home. And, well, I miss our apartment. And now we don't have our own place to live. And sometimes I wonder if we'll ever have our own home again.
She's a character that more than 2.5 million children nationwide can identify with. That's the number that are currently experiencing homelessness. Nearly half of them are under 6. Dr. Jeanette Betancourt is with Sesame Workshop, the group behind Sesame Street, and says they've put together some things that can help everyone support friends or family members who are dealing with homelessness.
There are tremendous resources to help explain what family homelessness is, and all of those resources can be found on SesameStreetInCommunities.org. And in there's a wonderful storybook that actually explains it from a child's perspective, and it's a wonderful way to use, not only for children who are in this situation, but also all children. And that's our focus. How do we have compassion and empathy for everyone at all times?
Sesame Street and Communities hopes to reach 4.5 million kids under age 6 and their families, as well as connect with those who are providing services to those families. It's not the first time Sesame Street has tackled tough subjects. Hunger and food insecurity have also been storylines for the show, which isn't stopping at their on-air presence to help raise awareness of social issues. You can learn more at SesameStreetAndCommunities.org. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
It's the new Jerry Willis podcast.
I love giving you an edge with your money. I like to break it all down so that you wind up with more money in your pocket, more confidence in your future.
Find it now on foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Chris Wallace.
What's on your mind?
Hi, this is Chris Wallace, anchor of Fox News Sunday, and one of the stories we'll be covering this week is the border bill and the fact that it only gives the president $1.375 billion for the wall. There are a lot of conservatives Some people in talk radio were saying the president's a wimp, he shouldn't have signed on for this. And I guess my reaction is, what more would you ask him to do? Because he helped shut down the government for 35 days. He fought as hard as he could. He made it a big issue. Fact is, as Barack Obama famously said, whether you like it or not, elections have consequences. The House is controlled by the Democrats. The Democrats, rightly or wrongly, have made this an issue. Nancy Pelosi said she wasn't going to give him a dollar for the wall. She ended up giving him $1.3 billion for the wall. And, you know, you might really look at when Republicans had control of both houses of Congress for the last 2 years, and Paul Ryan was Speaker, not Nancy Pelosi. Why didn't they get the job done then? In any case, I'm not quite sure why conservatives are upset with the president. I can't see really what more he could have done. In any case, we'll be talking about all of that on Sunday. And one of our guests, Rush Limbaugh, the king of talk radio. See you then.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com. Download the One with Greg Gutfeld.
I have a feeling tonight I'll probably be eating mortadella on crackers while drinking a Pinot Noir in the backyard.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.